You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What a win. And I'm not even talking about the Astros. On a joyous Thursday morning in Houston, welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on Thursday, the Rockets wrapped up a 105-104 buzzer-beating win in Philadelphia on Wednesday night. What a finish with Eric Gordon hitting a three at the horn to win by one. Apologies for not having an immediate post-game reaction show, as you guys probably saw from my Twitter. I've been working the World Series games out at Minute Maid Park doing stories on the watch parties. So I actually waited to see the game in full until this morning. I DVR'd it. Of course, I followed along on my phone, saw all the highlights and everything as it went along last night. But boy, that last minute for the Rockets was a work of art. The game as a whole wasn't, but you certainly wouldn't expect it to be, considering the Rockets are without three rotation players, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, and Nene. That's a third of your rotation, one of them being a top 10 player in the entire NBA. This was never going to be pretty, especially on the road against a team in Philadelphia that, even though they've gotten off to a little bit of a sluggish start at 1-4, there's a ton of talent there. And when they really want to win, when they're playing at home and they have a big-time environment, and you've got guys like Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons with superstar talent, and then you have solid role players like J.J. Redick and Robert Covington around them, yeah, they're a pesky team. They really wanted that game because they'd gotten off to a 1-3 start, far below what their expectations were. So you could see they played with a purpose all night. The crowd was into it. And yet, despite all of that, the Rockets in the last minute of that game, what a run. 9-0 in the final minute. 40, but basically, 8-0 in the final minute and 5 seconds to steal the game after being down 7 with barely over a minute to go. Just a phenomenal exercise in maturity from the Rockets. Again, you don't want them to coast throughout the season and rely on their ability to steal games. Ideally, the best way you can execute in close games is to and have a good record in close games is to avoid them. But sometimes that's going to happen. And so when you see the Rockets make these kind of veteran winning plays against a team in the Sixers that's very talented but may not quite be there from the standpoint of closing out a game, it makes you feel really, really good. And it was just basically, the last minute, as I said, it was a work of art. You started down 7 calmly, got a Clint Capella alley-oop dunk out of the pick-and-roll pass from James Harden. That brought you within 5, got the stop. And then, boy, I think what really showed the desire the Rockets were playing with was actually 30 seconds left when Harden got the and-one, got pummeled to the floor by Embiid. He had to take a pounding, but he got the and-one on the goaltend, made the free throw. And then, this was interesting, so that cuts it to 2. At the 30-second mark, you've got a differential of about maybe 5.5 seconds, and it's a 2-point game. I think a lot of teams would have seriously considered fouling. Now, they wouldn't have fouled immediately. I think they would have tried for a hard trap. But when you think about letting it play all the way out with a differential of only 5.5 seconds, there's a couple of things. Number one, you have to fully trust your defense to get a stop. Secondly, you have to trust your team that they can get the rebound. And then third, you have to think that you have to hope that you have enough creators offensively to make a legitimate shot happen within like 5.5 seconds. So there were a lot of variables at play there. I think a lot of teams might have preferred to foul and hope that the other team misses one or two free throws. And even if they don't, then all of a sudden you get the ball down 4 and it could be down 2 or 3, but you have 25 seconds left and you try and shoot a 3 and you get back into the game that way by chipping away. The Rockets, they did what a veteran team does, which is they trusted that they could out-execute, and boy, did they. We know the final play. I'll get to that in a minute. But what shouldn't get lost in the shuffle was that sequence. The Sixers, when they really needed a bucket up 2 with the ball, could not even get a shot off. Last effort was Jared Bayless trying to create against James Harden, and Harden not only stayed with him, he blocked the shot, forcing the 24-second violation. Phenomenal defense from James Harden. Funny, we haven't seen that many vines on that, at least I haven't, on Twitter, but it was just tremendous defense and desire from James Harden. Actually ended up not even needing the rebound since that got a 24-second violation, but if they needed it, well, Clint Capella had just a phenomenal game, 16 points, 20 rebounds, we'll get to him in just a few minutes, because from an individual standpoint, yeah, he was certainly your standout, even if he didn't lead the team in scoring. But to kind of cap off that final minute, of course, the final play got it into Ryan Anderson, who got it to James Harden, coming basically downhill. That's what you want. If there's a play for the Rockets late in games, trailing, what you want is to get the ball to James Harden with a head of steam. That's why in the past we've seen, and I go back to that Denver game last year that the Rockets won almost at the buzzer on a layup with 2 seconds left, but why Mike D'Antoni doesn't call timeouts. Now here he did call timeout because they needed to advance the ball, but in general, he's not going to call timeouts if James Harden has the ball, because if you're the Rockets, what you want, it's not so much a play per se, it is, can you get the ball to James Harden going downhill? And then from there, you have to trust that either he can make something happen himself or he's going to make the right decision. In the case of that final play, he, of course, he's always got an eye on Eric Gordon, because Gordon's clearly the second best player on the team right now and certainly the best shooter. And I think they knew going in that they would definitely love to take a shot for the win if it presented itself. So when Harden went downhill, he knew that that momentum was going to force someone to help. Joel Embiid, he didn't even fully help, but he just took a step to at least get in range where theoretically he could be in play for a shot block, something like that. And Harden, out of the corner of his eye, he saw that and he knew that was all the space that Eric Gordon would need. So because Embiid was slightly out of position, trying to hedge on Harden a little bit, Embiid then, when he was trying to recover and get out to contest Gordon, he had to leave his feet. That meant Gordon could fake the shot, take one step over, and get a clean look at a three as time expired. He made it, and pandemonium ensues. The Rockets win by one. But it was just exquisite execution down the stretch, offensively and defensively. The pick and roll, Harden to Capella, the and one that Harden got taking a beating from Embiid. That shows you the level of desire that he was playing with to take that level of contact with 30 seconds. Then the stop on Jared Bayless, and of course, finding Eric in the corner. Pump fake, getting Embiid in the air, and then getting the clean look at a three from the left corner as time expired. Just a phenomenal clutch close to the game for the Rockets. It wasn't the best game overall, and there were certainly things to nitpick at, but as I said, that's sort of something you sort of expect. Over the case of over 48 minutes, a sample size that large, if you're missing Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, and Nene, you're going to have some problems. The question is, when the chips are down, can you find a way to buckle down when it really, really matters and just have that burst to get a win? And they did. And that's two times this year that we've seen it. Don't forget that opening win at Golden State when the Rockets literally, other than the final margin, they did not lead the entire game other than 2-0 on the first possession. The Rockets were trailing the entire way, but they trusted themselves. They never let themselves get rattled that when it really mattered, they could make a push. And as I said leading off, it's not something that you want to do with regularity. I think generally the best way to have, you know, to win a lot of games is not to be clutch. It's to avoid these clutch situations in the first place. That's something that Daryl Morey has said many times in the past. Nonetheless, it's good to know. I do think that certain teams have that extra gear. You don't want to rely on it too much because certainly a large sample size, that's going to get exposed. But I think it does wonders for confidence knowing that you have that, you know, you essentially have that tool in your bag that when you really need it, you do have the ability over, you know, a minute or two to get to a level of play that almost every other team around the NBA cannot get to other than maybe the Warriors. The Rockets are just capable of bringing that out when they need it. And who knows, maybe they would have done the same thing in Monday's loss against Memphis if not for some of the awful officiating calls down the stretch of that game, because certainly there were a couple of possessions when Harden and Gordon had the ball that they didn't even get to play out because of some of the absurd things that happened late. But yeah, that's two wins out of the Rockets' first four. They're 4-1 now that easily could have been losses. And so, yes, you can certainly focus on that part, although at Golden State, I think it's kind of silly to see that as a bad sign that you were losing a lot of that game. So yeah, you can nitpick if you want, but I'm going to look at the positive, which is that's two games out of the four wins that they had executed incredibly well down the stretch. That's actually kind of the opposite of last year. Last year, if you remember the Rockets, you know, they had a lot of big wins, but if there was one recurring theme, they actually did not play that well in close games down the stretch. So to see the Rockets execute this well when it really matters on both ends of the court, to me, that's a really positive sign for the mental health of this team. And yes, you could say, well, Philadelphia is not a contender, so it shouldn't be that close in the first place. And yeah, we'll talk about the highs and lows of the game momentarily. But I just want to lead off with just how beautiful that last minute was. And sometimes when you're a team like the Rockets, you're not going to be able, maybe it's injuries, maybe it's just the grind of an 82-game season, you're not going to bring it for the full 48 minutes. But if you can provide that level of burst that no other team other than maybe the Warriors can get to, that's just absolutely huge to have that in your bag of tricks. Now, as far as individuals, this was a game, it did not play out as I expected before. The last 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, are episodes of Locked on Rockets, and that was after we knew the Chris Paul bruised knee. We did not know until Tuesday about Trevor Ariza, who's going to miss at least two more games with a foot sprain, and then Nene, who's got some Achilles soreness. We didn't know those injuries. So the past couple of days, I spent episodes talking about, well, the signing of Isaiah Cannon, which was meant to help fill some of those third guard minutes behind James Harden and Eric Gordon now that there's no Chris Paul. And then, of course, who's going to fill the other minutes for Trevor Ariza and Nene? And I made my case yesterday for a way that they could do it, that no one other than James Harden even exceeds 35 minutes, and James wouldn't exceed 37, and that was by both Isaiah Cannon and Troy Williams getting maybe 12 minutes or so of run with the potential for more if they played well. That did not really happen. The Rockets played 9 players in Philadelphia, but 2 of them very sparingly. Isaiah Cannon played 4 minutes. Demetrius Jackson played 8. Really, and then your other bench player, Tarik Black, had just 12 minutes. So really, you just had 6 guys, your starters with Luke Bamute in place of Trevor Ariza, and then P.J. Tucker, all play 32 minutes or more. James Harden actually played 41 minutes. Eric Gordon played 40. That's a little more than I was expecting, certainly. Ryan Anderson went at 35 because he also had some minutes at the 5 spot, so it wasn't all Clint Capella and Tarik Black. You did have a few minutes here and there with Ryan Anderson as your small ball 5, which we've seen from time to time. But the minutes, long-term, yeah, I think it's a problem for James Harden and Eric Gordon to play 41 minutes and 40, especially Gordon playing 40. I think that's a recipe for them to break down if you do it consistently. However, when you take a step back and look at the schedule, there are reasons that I think that last night might be an outlier. Now, first off, A, the game was close throughout, so you know there's always going to be a way that you can sneak minutes off if a game is less competitive, like say the beatdown against Dallas last Saturday night, and that wasn't the case last night. So that obviously, when you're in a close game on the road that you'd like to win, that's certainly a limiting factor in how much you can rest them. Beyond that, both played well. James had 27 points, 13 assists, 10 of 20 from the field, very, very efficient. What's actually most remarkable about James's line, he was 10 of 20 from the field, and he was only 2 of 8 from 3, so that tells you that he was 8 of 12 from inside the arc, so very efficient on his drives. Only went to the line 5 times, but that included the and one he drew in the final minute, which was absolutely enormous. Eric led the team in scoring, Eric Gordon with 29 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, shot just 7 of 20 from the field, 5 of 16 from 3, but well, he made the one that mattered most at the buzzer. So that's certainly good to see. But Eric's 3-point shooting, that's going to come around. He's one of the better shooters on the planet. I'm not worried about that. What tells you what you need to know about Eric is actually the 12 free throws. He made 10 of them. That shows you what we've seen for a while, which is that in addition to being a 3-point bomber, he's feeling good enough, he's feeling spry enough to attack, to make plays happen off the dribble. It's amazing to think in this game, Gordon had 12 free throw attempts to Harden's 5. Gordon was actually the more aggressive guard between the two in terms of attacking the rim. And you wouldn't know it by looking at the field goal attempts, because by field goal attempts, 16 of Eric Gordon's 20 shots were from behind the arc. But he did drive plenty. It's just on many of those, you know, if you get fouled, it doesn't count as a free throw attempt. I mean, as a field goal attempt, but it still reflects the fact that he's willing to go in and drive and not just be a stationary three-point shooter. So he's still feeling very good, even taking 16 threes. He has not reverted back into just a shooter mode. He is still a playmaker, and that's reflected, of course, in his 29 points, which included 10 at the free throw line on his 12 attempts. But the 40 minutes, we've said before, Eric Gordon, there's a point of diminishing returns. We know last year the first 40 games when the Rockets were phenomenal, started 31-9. That was when he averaged almost 18 points a game, over 40% from three. Those numbers dramatically fell off in the second half, seemed to wear down, had a couple of injuries to his feet, also his back. You don't want that to happen again. And it's going to be very tempting in the absence of Chris Paul. You hope he'll come back soon. Long term, I think the Rockets felt good about keeping Eric fresher this season, because with Chris Paul in place, in theory, he would not have to do as much of the heavy lifting from a creating standpoint and taking the pounding, because he would be basically the number 3 playmaker, not the number 2, as he was a year ago. But unfortunately, Chris Paul's injury has changed that in the short term. So the Rockets need to be wary of not overextending him, even if ultimately Chris Paul is going to be able to help that situation when he gets back, hopefully within a week or two. So at the surface, 40 minutes, yeah, it's one of those things. You got the win, you feel good, but is Mike D'Antoni going to overextend these guys? Because it is October, it is just one game of 82. But the reason, besides the game being competitive, besides them playing well, the reason I think this game might have been an outlier, well, there's a couple of reasons for it. But I mentioned earlier Isaiah Cannon, Demetrius Jackson played 4 and 8 minutes, respectively. I think they brought in Isaiah Cannon to give them more stability than Demetrius Jackson. But in game one, there's a reason why that Mike D'Antoni typically prefers newly acquired players to go through a practice before they play. He played his 4 minutes, looked fairly tentative as far as I was concerned. You can tell that if Isaiah Cannon plays 4 minutes in this three-point happy offense and doesn't get off a three, that shows you that he was playing a little tentative. And then Demetrius Jackson at this point in his 8 minutes, he is what he is. He's a quality defender, good athlete at this point, but he just needs more seasoning in terms of running the offense, continuing to work on his mechanics and getting better from behind the arc. Isaiah and Demetrius had no points in their 12 combined minutes. So I think that's why they brought in Isaiah Cannon, so they could limit those minutes for James Harden and Eric Gordon until Chris Paul comes back. But day one, the signing of Isaiah Cannon was not even finalized until less than 90 minutes before tip-off. We got the press release at 4:45 yesterday afternoon, and the game tipped at 6. That's not much time to go through the offense, even if he's familiar with the team, the organization, with Mike D'Antoni. Yeah, they still need to actually see things happen on the basketball court with this particular group of players. So I think, A, you extended them in the short term because you're not that worried about Isaiah Cannon continuing to not be a contributor. It's just kind of a one-off. It's his first game, and hopefully by the weekend you give him a practice. They're in Charlotte today getting ready for the game tomorrow night in Charlotte. You give Isaiah Cannon a practice, and hopefully he's more capable of giving you minutes, and he's more confident by the time he's gone through a practice and gets in that rotation on Friday night. The other part of it is that this is a game, there was no game on Tuesday, and there's no game on Thursday. There have been a lot of back-to-backs lately, back-to-back to open the season. They've got back-to-back this weekend at Charlotte on Friday night, and then at Memphis on Saturday. So, yeah, not just two back-to-backs in the first week, but about a week and a half, but two road back-to-backs, which includes an immediate plane flight after the game in both instances. So I think those are the games where you have to get really worried about, are you overextending an Eric Gordon or even a James Harden? Because even though he's Superman, again, we saw what happened at the end of that Spurs series last year, so you have to be careful with that, even if Harden doesn't have the nagging injuries that Eric Gordon has been prone to at least the last couple of years, and certainly this past season with the Rockets. But in this particular case, it's a fun game. It was close. They wanted it. They needed it. I think it was big for the mental health of this team to get it, to go to 4-1, now 3-0 away from home. But this is a rare situation. You had an off day before, and you had an off day after. So if you are going to extend a player to 40 minutes a game, as you did for both Gordon and Harden, this would be the case to do it. I don't think it's going to continue. I think in a back-to-back, they'll be naturally more cautious. And then secondly, I think Isaiah Cannon's going to be more ready to play this weekend as opposed to being picked up off the street, not even going through a practice, and then being asked to play NBA rotation minutes. I think that was a lot to ask, and there's a reason why Mike D'Antoni typically wants every newly acquired player to go through a practice before he hits the court. So ultimately, I think that situation is going to resolve itself. It is something to watch this weekend because I think you want to ideally cap Eric at about 35 minutes and James at about 37 probably, but I wouldn't worry excessively just based on this game because there are some extenuating circumstances with just how new Cannon was and you not having a game the day before or the day after. So I think that made the Rockets a little more willing to experiment with the minutes in this case and tighten the rotation. Because, yeah, I mentioned that Isaiah Cannon, I guess they did play 12 minutes combined at the guard spot, so that was what was expected. What kind of surprised me was that Troy Williams did not get any run at all. It's actually surprised me a little bit. The entire preseason, and the opening of the regular season that Troy Williams has not gotten more of a look. Because Troy, to me, when you saw how well he played in the summer league, he was a contributor down the stretch last season for Houston, started 13 games last year for Memphis, and you're looking at a guy who's very athletic, who has, I don't want to say he's a great shooter, but has certainly shown some positive things from a shooting and scoring perspective. And then in the absence of Trevor Ariza, it's floored me that Troy Williams still did not get any run. But at the same time, we don't get to see what happens in practice. I'm going to assume it may be, you know, a similar situation to KJ McDaniels, and that for whatever reason, he's not making it happen in practice, and Mike D'Antoni wants to see that from him before giving him NBA rotation minutes. Again, he was actually demoted to the developmental league, the G League level, earlier this week before being recalled after the injury to Trevor Ariza. So I think it's clear the Rockets want to see something more from Troy Williams, and maybe he'll get to prove it this weekend. Because with it being a back-to-back, I do think you're going to see a little bit more of a sense of urgency to play longer minutes for guys like Isaiah Cannon, Troy Williams, etc., than you would have in this case with, you know, a rest day both before and after. That surprised me a little bit, but you didn't really extend anyone too much other than the two guards. Ryan at 35, Bamute at 36, PJ Tucker at 32. It's a little high, but generally it's manageable, and of course you hope that when Nene gets back, it sounds like he could be back relatively soon, and hopefully Ariza, they'll reevaluate him after they get home. That'll be on Sunday following the game in Memphis, and hopefully he'll be back early next week as well. So it shouldn't be that long, but these guys, I wouldn't say the minutes are that much to worry about, especially on a short-term basis. And then maybe this weekend, Troy Williams finally gets his shot, but I'm not going to guarantee it anymore. I've been thinking for a while that this is going to be the game that Troy Williams gets a look, and then for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. So at this point, I think it's one of those things, it is what it is, and maybe the back-to-back gets him a look, but if not, I think you're just hoping for Trevor Ariza's foot to turn out in good shape when he gets reevaluated on Sunday when they return from this three-game road trip, and hopefully Trevor's ready to go next Monday when the Rockets return home to play these same Sixers. But despite all of that, I've sort of buried the lead, and I did that a little bit by design, because I want to finish on a high note. And that high note is Clint Capela. Because, yeah, I went through the minutes of the other, I would call them the six rotation regulars right now. You usually have a nine-man rotation, but, well, you've got three in Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, and Nate are out. So you have six rotation minutes and then just spot minutes here and there for Tarik Black and whichever guard, Isaiah Cannon, and Demetrius Jackson. I've saved the best for last, which is Clint Capela. What a massive game it was for him. I briefly mentioned his stat line earlier. 16 points, 20 rebounds, plus 9 in his 32 minutes. Shot 7 of 9 from the field. Just a remarkable game, and really continues a remarkable start to the season for Clint through his first 5 games. And one of the better parts of it, we've been talking minutes and what the minutes rotation looks like with this sudden wave of injuries. Well, you know what happened Wednesday night in Philadelphia? Clint Capela stepped it up to a true starters level minutes. 32 per game, and he was still out there in the 31st and 32nd minute making a real difference. As I said, he was instrumental, of course, defensively in protecting the rim so the Sixers could not score in the final minute and a half of that game. And, well, he had the alley-oop that started that final closing 8-0 push that got the Rockets the win. But for the season as a whole, I want to draw attention to just how great Clint Capela has been. He's averaging 25 minutes a game, but that's a little misleading. I'll explain why in a minute. But 15.4 points, 11.4 rebounds, he's shooting 73% from the field, and he's actually shooting almost 88%, albeit a small sample, from the free throw line. He's even making his free throws. In his last, in 3 of his last 4 games, he's 2 of 2, 3 of 3, and 2 of 2. So, small sample, but yeah, any growth to the free throw line is big. But beyond that, he is everything you could hope for. His player efficiency rating is an absurd 33.7, which ranks third in the NBA. Just absolutely ridiculous. He has been phenomenal. Courtesy of Taylor Pate, his per 36 numbers are 22.5 points per game, 16.5 rebounds, 2.3 blocks. He is an even 1.7 steals. He is an absolute monster. Now, yes, the caveat, it's 5 games. It could change. We know all of that stuff. However, right now, he should be an all-star. He is that good. It's a contract year for him. We've said for a while, year 4 contract year, this is when you see pretty much what Clint Capela is going to be. Because after this year, I think your four of the contract players generally are what they are. And boy, so far through five games, he is making that leap. And it's not like it's coming against bad competition either. He did it against Marc Gasol on Monday night, had 14 points on 7-9 shooting. He did it against Joel Embiid, 16 points and 20 rebounds. One of the big differences in this game, just man-to-man, Joel Embiid had 6 rebounds in his 25 minutes. Capela had 20 in his 32. Capela, he's worked for years. It's been a very delicate process for Clint over the years to build up more stamina and build up more strength because, yes, you want those things, but he has to do it very slowly because you want to do it in such a way that you build that strength without compromising the athleticism and speed and burst that makes him unique from a from an athlete perspective. And boy, has he ever done that. He looks chiseled now, but he still has that elite athleticism at the pick and roll that we've seen since he was a rookie alongside James Harden. So five games, but right now, Clint Capela looks like an all-star. And if you combine that with what we've seen from Eric Gordon, 29 points, including the game winner on Wednesday night, just imagine what happens when you get Chris Paul back, a top 10 player in the NBA, if and when he's healthy. This team can be really, really special. And as far as the minutes, the one thing you can throw out there, you know, the per 36 stats are amazing, 22.5 points, 16.5 rebounds, but he's only playing 25 minutes per game. Well, that's a little misleading because two of the games, he had 18 minutes the opener against the Warriors. That was a matchup that, well, especially at Oracle Arena, it's just tough no matter who your center is to play traditional basketball in that setting because when they go to that death lineup with Draymond Green at the five, there's no one for the center to guard. So, yes, in theory, you could have left Clint Capela out there for more time and maybe you would have gotten a couple of easier baskets on offense. But defensively, it would have just felt like empty stat padding for Clint, really, because defensively there just would have been no one for him to pick up, and you probably would have lost more defensively than you would have added offensively. So yeah, the minutes when you play Golden State, especially at Oracle, when it's easier for them to dictate the tempo and style of play, playing in front of their fans, then that's just artificially going to be low. And then he played 21 minutes Saturday against Dallas. That was a game that the Rockets were up 34 points after three quarters, and everyone's minutes were artificially low because, well, it's a blowout, and you want to save miles when you can. But when he's needed to, he stepped it up. 32 minutes last night, 16 and 20. The game in Sacramento, which was the second night of a back-to-back, team as a whole was very lethargic, especially the perimeter guys that had to do so much of the heavy lifting against the Warriors because of the style of play that the Warriors employ, the factors we were just discussing. That was when Clint Capela went up against Willie Cauley-Stein, who was very game. Then Cauley-Stein had 21 and 10, but Clint in his 28 minutes had 22 and 17. And yeah, he made it to almost 30 minutes per game, just the same way. Well, he actually exceeded 30 minutes per game last night at 32. So we are, and in both of those games, he was strong at the finish. So yes, his minutes are at 25 a game, but through five games, that's a little circumstantial. It's a combination of the blowout against Dallas and just the unique way of how the Warriors play. And right now, the Warriors are weighted at 20% of your schedule. Ultimately, that's going to go down a lot. What we've generally seen so far, and yes, it's early, but against the Kings and against the Sixers, Clint Capela is not only capable of playing 30 minutes a night, that's what he averaged in those two games, and continuing his production, he's able to do it and still be as strong at the finish as he is in the first quarter. So yes, it's a small sample size. There are a lot of caveats. But what I am seeing from Clint, there is no reason for me to believe that it can't continue. And if it does, then boy, this is an all-star level player. And just imagine what can happen when you get Chris Paul back and you have two playmakers. Well, I shouldn't even say two. You have three playmakers because we've got to lump Eric Gordon in that elite guard playmaking class along with Harden and Paul, the way Eric Gordon's playing at the moment. But just imagine when you have all three of those elite guards and Clint Capela playing at an all-star level. This team can be really, really good. And despite all that, I'm not going to try and be a homer with this. I understand that the Rockets were losing a lot of this game to the Sixers, and generally, that's not ideal. But in this case, you have to understand the sensitivities of this situation for the Rockets right now, the roster limitations, without three rotation pieces, including Chris Paul, a top 10 NBA player, signed Isaiah Cannon to try and help with that, but coming just off the street, it's not really fair to expect him to have a real impact just 75 minutes or so after after joining the team. Carlini's go through a practice. So there were lots of extenuating circumstances in this one that, to me, make it relevant. And I'll make it understandable that the Rockets would be in a tight game with the Sixers. And then beyond that, let's also give the Sixers some credit. As I said leading off, I know the record isn't quite there yet, but this is an extremely talented team. You look at Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. These are two superstar caliber players. Embiid had 21-6 in his 25 minutes. Simmons had 14 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. Looks like a walking triple-double machine. And then they've surrounded those two with very steady role players like Robert Covington, like J.J. Redick, who had 22. Actually, those two guys had 42 points between them on roughly 50% shooting from the field. So yeah, there's a lot of talent on that Sixers team. I know their reputation in recent years, but it's a very good team, so give them some credit as well. But the Rockets, it's as feel-good of a win as you could hope for out of the circumstances, because A, they showed that extra gear when it really mattered late. They showed that level of maturity, James Harden, Eric Gordon, that they could really buckle down both ends of the court to make it happen. It's very similar to what we saw in Golden State in Game 1 of the season. And then beyond that, when you look at the Rockets roster, it wasn't a perfect game. They were a little better from three, shot almost 31%, 48% overall. But, you know, it wasn't a great game. Eric Gordon, 7 of 20. Ryan Anderson, his first game that he really perked up from behind the arc, so that's a good sign. 4 of 9 from behind the arc from him. Ryan had 14 points in his 35 minutes, but just one rebound, although a lot of those went to Clint, as I said, 20 in his 32 minutes. It was a mixed bag. P.J. Tucker in his 32 minutes, 1 of 4 from the field. The two guards, Isaiah Cannon and Demetrius Jackson, went scoreless in 12 minutes. It wasn't a perfect game, but the guys that you would consider the variables, the X factors, they came through. Eric Gordon with a game-high 29 points, including the game winner. Clint Capella, 16 points, 20 rebounds. And then, to a lesser extent, Ryan Anderson, 4 of 9 from behind the arc. Those are the guys that are going to determine whether you can truly make a run at the Warriors this year. Because James Harden and Chris Paul, we know who they are. Assuming Chris Paul gets healthy, and I have no reason to doubt that at this point, then I feel pretty secure in who they are and what they're going to be in April and May. As far as whether the Rockets can make a run at the Warriors with this year's team, the bottom line is they need more star-level players. The Warriors, what makes them so lethal, it's not just Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant, because the Rockets have two top 10 players too. It's that they have probably four top 25 players by the time you add in Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. And of course, the great system they run in, there's a lot of depth, yada yada. But it's not just two top-end players, it's four. So the key for the Rockets, yes, James Harden and Chris Paul is a hell of a foundation, but it's why they went after Carmelo Anthony. They were gambling that maybe Melo, in the right circumstance, could develop into that guy. That didn't happen. So in the absence of a Melo move, your best chance to get to the Warriors level this year is to have internal growth, to have your variables take that step. The two variables, in my opinion, are Clint Capella and Eric Gordon. Those are the two guys who have a shot, based on various factors, to develop into legitimate all-star level players. And it's going to take a little bit of luck. It's also going to take health. It's going to take minute management, which I hope we see more of Mike D'Antoni using this weekend when it's a back-to-back. But when you not only get a close win at the buzzer, but you get a win on the back of largely your two variables going out and doing really your upside scenario, playing like all-stars, then boy, that gets you really excited for what this team could be once you get Chris Paul back and you have the foundation that you were counting on of two top 10 players in Chris and James. So with all that said, I don't have a happier way to end the podcast. Oh yeah, I do. The Astros have tied the World Series. I can't go any longer without discussing that. What a night it was in Houston. I sarcastically used Houston sports as a hashtag earlier when the Astros had some of their lowlights, but what an incredible finish for them. And then you combine the Astros rally, home runs in the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings from Marwin Gonzalez, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, and finally the ultimate game winner from George Springer in the 11th. Incredible resilience from them, incredible resilience from the Rockets, who outscored the Sixers 8-0 in the final minute and 5 seconds, punctuated by that Eric Gordon three at the buzzer. Just an incredible night in Houston sports. Incredible time to be a Houston sports fan. So, folks, enjoy it. And that's why I'm going to wrap up this podcast here. I want to leave you guys feeling good. And this is a pretty positive time to be a Houston sports fan, not just for the Astros, but certainly your Rockets as well, because 4-1 after a win at the buzzer in Philadelphia. I know it was a little closer than a lot of you expected, but generally, in my opinion, this should be a pretty feel-good win. But today's the day to enjoy it, because tomorrow we've got a lot of Rockets games ahead. Back-to-back this weekend at Charlotte Friday night, at Memphis Saturday night, and back home at Toyota Center on Monday for Philadelphia. So take a day to enjoy this one, and then we'll be back tomorrow to break down the basketball to happen against Dwight Howard. By the way, that's another part of the Clint Capella story. As I said, it's not like he's doing this against scrubs. He did it against Marc Gasol Monday night, Joel Embiid last night, Willie Cauley-Stein a week ago when he had 20-10, and then this weekend he's got Dwight Howard, who's had a good start to the season in Charlotte, and then Marc Gasol again on Saturday. So as fun as this game is, then yeah, you've got a lot more tests upcoming, both Charlotte and Memphis are quality teams, and so we'll learn even more about Clint Capella and just how real his start is this weekend. But until then, yeah, just enjoy the win. It's a fun day in Houston, so yeah, get outside, weather's great, enjoy it, and then we'll be back to talking more hoops this weekend. Until then, if you want to follow me on Twitter for talk about the Rockets, the Astros, or really anything related to Houston sports, please do that at Ben Dubose, or you can follow the show at Lockdown Rockets. Also, email the show, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Once again, happy, happy final from Philadelphia. Rockets 105, Sixers 104. That came courtesy of an Eric Gordon buzzer-beating three. Rockets are now 4-1 on the season and back in action Friday night in Charlotte against old friend Dwight Howard. Until then, have a good one, Houston, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Lockdown Rockets.